Okay, start at any time, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to call the Commission on Homelessness meeting to order. First, I'd like to welcome our new members who the clerk indicates in her efficient way has sworn them all in. And those new members are happy to welcome you aboard and to work alongside you as we review and make recommendations back to the Board of Supervisors to address homelessness in our communities. New members are Robert Dunn, the Chief of Police for Fullerton, Milo Penniman, the CEO of American Family Housing, George Searcy with Jamboree Housing, and James Vanderpool, the City Manager of Anaheim. Look forward to your valuable participation input. And now, if I may, I'd like to put one of you to work. Chief Dunn, would you please lead us in a Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes, sir. Please join me. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance,
to the flag of the United States of America.
And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chief. The agenda today contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on the agenda. The Commission encourages public participation. If you wish to speak on any item appearing on the agenda or during public comments, you'll be instructed when to join public comments via Zoom by pressing star 9 on your phone or the raise hand button in Zoom. When you're unmuted, please begin your comments by stating your name, or you may use a pseudonym if you not wish to use to identify yourself for the record. Speakers will be given 3 minutes to speak, and the clerk will run the timer and announce when your time is up. With that, we'll move on to the roll call. Madam Clerk, you please call the roll.
Thank you. If the commissioners could please respond when I call your name. We'll start with our chairman, Supervisor Doug Chafee.
Present.
And our vice chairman, Dan Young. Okay, Richard Afable. Randy Black. Robert Dunn. Present. Marshall Moncrief. Don't see Marshall. Jim Palmer.
Present.
Sue Parks.
Present.
Milo Penniman. And am I saying that correctly?
You are present. Thank you.
George Searcy.
Here.
Tita Smith.
Present.
District Attorney Todd Spitzer.
Todd Spitzer's here.
Scott Stiles. I think you're muted, Scott, but I can see you on my screen, so I'm marking you here. Jeff Twan.
Present.
James Vanderpool.
Here.
Don Wagner.
Here.
Nathan Wilson. Paul Wyatt.
Here.
And then Jean Ari. Matt Bates.
Here.
Okay, I can confirm we have a quorum of voting members present.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Let's now move on to the discussion items. Madam Clerk, will you please read the first item?
Okay, the first item under the discussion calendar is a report out on the Office of Care Coordination update. And at this time, if any members of the public would wish to speak on item one, please press star 9 on your telephone now or raise hand in the Zoom app. And I'm giving it just a moment. I do not see any members or anybody members of the public wishing to speak on this item? So go ahead, Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. I'll ask Doug Beck if you give your presentation. After a presentation and any discussion by the commission is complete, then we'll move on to the next item. And so, Mr. Brecht, you're on.
Yeah, thank you, Vice Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. We're excited to have everyone here at today's commission meeting. And this item is going to be a rotating agenda item. This is something that the working ad hoc group has asked for, and we're excited to, at each meeting, incorporate an update from the Office of Care Coordination. This update will highlight will highlight either a piece of legislation, funding, or a program that is significantly impacting the work that the commission is doing around homelessness here in Orange County. And for this month, we'd like to focus on the $22 billion housing and homelessness state funding package that the state and governor has introduced into legislation. And this $22 billion housing and homelessness funding package is essentially broken up and consists of many different bills. And I'm gonna do my best to provide a high level summary of this package while at the same time identifying with different pieces of the package where funding and how much funding will be coming to Orange County through this package. But I want to give a heads up that, as I mentioned, this package consists of many bills and many projects. Some of them have already been awarded and allocated, while others are either competitive funding that has still not been awarded, or allocations that are still being figured out. So details are still coming in. With that being said, this $22 billion package is really broken up into two, what I'll call buckets. The first one is the $10 billion for housing programs, which will result in 84,000 new affordable housing units, with 44,000 of those units being designated for individuals experiencing homelessness or households experiencing homelessness. The other bucket is a consists of $12 billion and is focused on providing specific housing and services across a range of homeless interventions. As you can see here, taking a slightly deeper step into these two buckets, the $10 billion focus on housing programs, that first bucket, is specifically targeted towards expanded rental assistance, foreclosure prevention, mortgage assistance, first-time home ownership investment, and financial initiatives on ways to produce and enhance state supply of long-term housing. So really targeted towards both renters and homeowners. Within this $10 billion, $5.2 billion comes from the Emergency Rental Assistance Program that the state received from the federal government and the U.S. Department of Treasury. Here in Orange County, we've had emergency rental assistance programs operating both locally and run by the state for the last several months, and over $300 million has been made available and is still available to households. So that's direct funding that's coming here to the county and to households, renting households that really need assistance in paying off arrears. So that's one piece of this that we could identify that comes straight to Orange County. In terms of the $12 billion bucket that's focused on housing and services, as we could see here, it's the focus of this bucket is the Rebuild California's Behavioral Health Housing System, yet again expanding access to affordable housing, assisting local governments to develop encampment outreach strategies, which I'll touch on in a second, and then providing additional resources towards home key acquisition. So for those of you that remember, Home Key was introduced by the governor last year in its first round of funding was a little over $600 million. And here in Orange County, we were able to utilize this funding to acquire two specific motel sites that are currently being converted into permanent supportive housing and will provide the county with 132 additional units in housing. The additional resources identified here for Home Key acquisition refer specifically to round two of Project Home Key, which is over $3 billion allocated towards acquiring properties and developing affordable housing. The county, with several local cities and local developers, are currently in the process of applying for this funding, and will hopefully here in Orange County result in several new permanent supportive housing and affordable housing projects. Additionally, in this $12 billion bucket, what is represented is is the Homeless Housing Assistance and Prevention Grant Round 3 in this bucket. And the reason I mention this is because this is really helpful funding that the county, the Continuum of Care, and Anaheim and the City of Santa Ana receive each year, and or have received the first two rounds. And now this third round is going to result in an additional $40 million that will allow this county to shape its homeless service system. So we're really excited about that. Moving on to the second part of this new update that we'll do each month is a focus on providing a little bit of statistics, a little bit of stats. That's another thing that we've heard from the commission and the working ad hoc group is the interest to see a little bit more data. The commission has been incredibly data driven, and this year provides a little bit more of a lens towards that. One of the challenges what you're gonna see here in front of you is the quarterly report that the Continuum of Care produces through its HMIS, Homeless Management Information System, each quarter centered around the utilization of homeless services. This, we believe, is a really good barometer of the utilization of our system. And these specific data points that you're seeing here, households served, clients served, active agencies, active projects, and exits destinations to permanent housing, we feel are five really good indicators of not only utilization, but performance. We understand that the data you're seeing in front of you is a one-time slice, and we're actively working on providing formatting this in a way that provides a greater picture. Seeing one slice is helpful, but what are we measuring it against? What are we seeing? So overall, this data has been collected in this format for only the last four quarters. And what we've seen here is, and what I want to point out for you all is that over the last year, the data you're seeing here points out that our homeless service system has served 86%, has an increase of 86% in the households it's served. So this time last year, we served almost 7,200 households. As you can see here, this last quarter, we served over 10,000. Something else worth noting is that we have a 15% increase in active projects from last year to this year, which is really exciting. And then obviously, as I think all of us believe, ending homelessness requires permanent housing. And we're excited that an additional 8,000 people have ended their homelessness and exited into permanent housing in the last year up until now. So each meeting, we'll look at this data. Like I said, we want to continue to work on presenting it in a more effective manner. So we appreciate the grace you all provide us. one additional thing I think that's really worth pointing out, and a data point that is something that might not initially be seen as important, but is, us is really important, is that active agencies and active projects, but especially the active agencies, because we firmly believe that the important to have a diversity in not only the services we provide, but the groups that provide them. So we're excited that, and we'll hopefully see that number, not grow to a gigantic number, but 48 represents really a strong representation of the large service community that we have here in Orange County. So I think that's about it for our update. I'd like to obviously feel free to open it up for any questions, but I'll send it back to you, Vice Chair Chafee. Thank you.
Thank you. If any member of the commission has a question, please feel free to ask it. I do have one in particular. We're talking about expanding rental assistance. And my question would be, how does a tenant who needs rental assistance apply for that? Do we have a key to send them somewhere? Who would be able to answer that?
Yes, so that's a great question. I'm glad we're able to advertise that here. Currently, in Orange County, most households can go to the state's website, and we'll put that in the chat box in a few minutes. I don't want to give the wrong address, but going to, if someone types in their browser, emergency rental assistance, state of California, the state's website, which is incredibly user-friendly, I think it's housingiskey.com, will not only allow them to apply, but if for some reason the state's not running their program for the town that they're in, that website will kick them to their local application process. So it's a very easy process. You go to housingiskey.com, you put your address in, and that'll start the process.
Oh, thank you for that. I would comment that the Orange County Housing Finance Trust, I'm sure, is going to be all over this additional funding, as the goal there is to create more affordable housing, and much of it to help people with special needs, and not just homeless, but also if they have some mental disabilities, for example. So it's a housing with wraparound services. And the key is to find sites, and that is sometimes very difficult. Rely on cities and our affordable housing developer community to do that. So this money coming out, we want to let cities and affordable housing developers know that it's there, and encourage them to apply. And if we can be of any help to them, we'll certainly do that. Does any commissioner have a question on this section of our update? I can't see any hands where I'm at. I need somebody to help me.
Yeah.
I do not see any hands up at this time.
So let me All right. here. This is Paul Wyatt. Just while I'm in.
Thank you, Paul.
I think 211 Orange County is also administering the emergency rental assistance program for the county and the city of Santa Ana. But if those who you were going to search on the website or the technology to find it on the state's program can dial 211 and they can guide you right to those assistance programs and help you get enrolled.
Thank you for that additional information. Any other commission member have input? Again, I can't see people raising their hands.
Mr. Chairman, it's Jim Palmer. Do we monitor the occupancy of the county funded shelters to know if they're full or what the occupancies are?
You know, that's a great question because the shelters are run mainly by cities, and I don't know how we coordinate that. Maybe Mr. Beck, you would have some better answer than I have.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the county operated shelters, which are the Yale Navigation Center and Bridges at Kramer's Place, and the two Home Key sites that are currently operating as an interim site, we monitor every single day the vacancy rate and communicate out to the service provider community and the referring community those vacancies in order to fill them as quickly as possible. In terms of the city-run shelters, we do some coordination, but there's not currently a universal system that communicates vacancies.
That's something we need to know, so that there's a vacancy, you can send the person there if they're able to go to that spot. And so I think that is something that will be coming as we coordinate better. Madam Clerk, do we have any other hands raised or people who would want to speak?
Not at this time.
Well, thank you. Mr. Beck, would you go on to update us on our working group ad hoc?
Chairman Chafee, this is Masood Shamel with County Council's office, and I would like to just point out to the commission one change that is the result of AB 361, if you indulge me for a second, Madam Clerk and Chairman Chafee.
Oh, please go ahead.
Thank you. I noticed that we did open the agenda item that we just discussed for public comment. I just want to note that under AB 361, if we're allowing time public comment for each item, even if we don't have a speaker that identifies himself or herself as speaking, we should let that time run in elapse. We cannot just end it just because nobody has registered prior or real time to speak. And when we get to the general public comment, the same rule applies, but I see that's down on the agenda. So just note it. In other words, the difference here is that under AB 361, you just let the time run, whatever time period we have allocated for the item. So if a speaker was allowed to speak 2 minutes, we would just let the time run for 2 minutes, and then we can just move on to the next item, if that's clear.
Well, I don't think I fully understood that. When we call for public comments and there's no one asking to comment, then we like to proceed with the item and then finish with it. We did already call for public comments on this item. We did break in between, because these are kind of different concepts. And are you suggesting that a public commenter could comment at any time?
No, what I'm suggesting is if this commission is allowing timed public comments, so if at the beginning of the agenda when it's open, the public can speak for 2 minutes or 3 minutes, I'm not exactly sure what this commission allows, we just open that period and let the time lapse, and then the commission can begin discussing that item. So it's not that at any time the public can speak, but during that period they can speak, but we don't short that time. That's my
we did call for public comments and there were none at that point. We proceeded with the item, and we come to the next item, we'll again call for public comments, and the public may comment, and if no one does want to comment, then we'll go into that item and conclude it.
Masood, just so that I'm clear, so are you saying that, so I haven't read the title for number two yet, but when I ask for public comments, even if nobody indicates raising their hand, we should let 3 minutes elapse before the commission begins?
That's correct.
To discuss?
That's correct. That's AB 361 change.
Okay. So with that, Chairman, I'm going to read the title for item number two, ask for public comments, and I will start the timer to give the public opportunity to chime in during that time.
We're not done with this item yet. We still have the working group ad hoc update.
Well, the working group ad hoc update is item number two on the agenda.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. So item number two under the discussion calendar is a report out on the working group ad hoc update. At this time, any members of the public wishing to speak on item two, please press *9 on your telephone now or the raise hand in the Zoom app. And I will start the timer now. Okay, I do have one request to speak at this time. So The speaker is Pat Davis. Pat, I have selected you to be able to unmute. So I believe it's star six on your phone, or unmute yourself in the app.
Yeah, I'm on the app. So thank you. And I do appreciate council clarifying because I wasn't certain, and I know there's public comments later, but I think I've mentioned this before. I am very interested in how this group becomes more effective, but it's difficult to make public comments before any information is shared. And I went looking for links to this from the agenda, and I could find none. So again, would be happy to comment, and I'm sure I'll have some after, but if there was a way to insert links in the agenda so I was more prepared to comment. Conceptually, it looks good. It's just how it moves forward. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We have about 2 more minutes left for on the timer. And at this time, I'm not seeing anybody else raising their hand to speak. So we'll just let that time elapse.
I think we had the speaker's time in that 3 minutes too.
Yes, so that was included. Mm-hmm.
All right, then if you would please read item 2. Or you already did, I'm sorry. Then you're calling for public comments. And so if Mr. Beck, would you give your presentation?
Yeah, absolutely. So in our previous meetings, we've identified the 4 pillars of the homeless system of care, and you can see them up here: prevention, outreach support services, shelter, and housing. Over the last 2 months since our last commission meeting, the working ad hoc group has been met several times to create a universal framework and process on how we're going to analyze each pillar. And they've come up with a framework that I'll be sharing here. So the commission will look at each pillar one at a time. And the cycle at which we will look at each pillar will run the course of essentially 2 commission meetings. And each pillar will be introduced at one meeting. And at that first meeting, essentially, what will be presented on that pillar will be a universal draft that the working ad hoc group has created around defining the pillar, identifying best practices, identifying specific goals for the pillar, and specific principles for that pillar to really set a framework for the discussion with the commission to help identify a lens and a strategy on addressing each particular pillar. During that first meeting, when we create that draft, we'll leave that meeting and essentially the working ad hoc group in our office will take that draft and meet with several key groups, programs and providers that are doing the work here locally, subject matter experts on that pillar that understand what's going on nationally and can identify best practices, and then those that have lived experience in a particular pillar with the services here locally. During those interviews and those listening sessions, we're excited to not only hear the work that they're doing, the experience that they have, and the advice that they have, but we'll really be taking that draft framework that was identified and built in the first meeting, and that framework will help guide our listening session, and we'll use that to sort of bounce off and validate that framework to these groups so that when we come back in that second meeting, The working ad hoc group will be able to present a final draft of that framework that not only incorporates the experience, input, and expertise of the commission members, but has also been validated through the local provider group, key subject matter experts, and also incorporates the voice of those with lived experience. We'll also, in that second group, bring back one provider or one group that we interviewed in between meetings to present on the work or project that they originally interviewed with us for. And the goal of that is to really share that with the commission at large and to enrich that discussion on the pillar and provide a little bit more context. We'll also encourage any of the commissioners who are actively doing work in that particular pillar to present on that work in that second meeting as well. What this will all result in is essentially a final draft, which will essentially be framework to bring to the Board of Supervisors that will provide them with a strategy and a guiding set of principles that'll help shape the homeless service system here in the county. So we see this as a really valuable exercise that will provide a rich set of guiding principles on prevention, outreach support and services, shelter and housing to the Board of Supervisors. This activity, as I mentioned, will essentially take the next 5 to 7 commission meetings. Like I said, we'll open one pillar in a meeting and close another in that same meeting. So there'll be a flow. Today, we're going to start this exercise out if you go to the next slide, by analyzing the prevention pillar. As I go through this, and as we start our exercise in this first pillar with the prevention pillar, I ask and encourage any of the working ad hoc group members to sort of jump in with any of their feedback and or thoughts as I go through the presentation. And then obviously at the end of the presentation, the floor will be open to the commissioners at large to provide their feedback and input. And I firmly believe that as we go through the first pillar, probably the second pillar will feel a little smoother and the third will feel even smoother than that. So we appreciate it. So here with the with prevention, as I mentioned, we'll start out each discussion focusing on really identifying what is that pillar, what's the definition. And the working ad hoc group helped create a definition around prevention that is defined as short-term interventions provided to individuals or families at risk of homelessness or experiencing a homeless crisis in a goal to achieve housing stability. The goal of prevention is to keep people in their homes and avoid an eviction with a short-term interventions through short-term interventions to stabilize housing. Can you go to the next slide? Here we're really interested in providing a little bit of data on each pillar, and this is another place where our data comes from our HMIS system. And as I mentioned with our previous set of data, we are continuing to polish and our presentation of this information. But as you can see here, quarter one of 2021, 2,800 households were served. Quarter two, we saw a gigantic spike to 9,700 households. Now, that spike is represented specifically through the incorporation of this emergency rental assistance program. This emergency rental assistance program that came down from the U.S. Department of Treasury that was previously discussed in the meeting in quarter two, 8,400 households are represented in that 9,700 figure. So 86% of all prevention services in quarter two were focused around emergency rental assistance. So you can see a really big impact here, and it'll be interesting moving forward as we work our way through COVID and we start to get back to, lack of a better term, normalcy in the next few years, how our data and the amount of resources and services around prevention will sort of flatten out or where it will land. So we went over the definition, we went over the goals, gave you a little bit of statistics, and now here's our draft set of best practices created by the Working Ad Hoc Group around prevention. We naturally put that first bullet, as you could see, is emergency rental assistance, specifically providing what is most often called as cash assistance, as stated here in the second bullet, that key service around financial assistance, assisting in rental arrears, utility arrears, past due, or unexpected expenses. Another best practice is around landlord mediation and housing court, conflict resolution, independent living skills, job employment readiness, and case management wraparound services and navigation. So this is really a list here of, as we create our framework for prevention and thinking about that guiding strategy, this here provides sort of a concrete example of some of the really specific programs and interventions that us as a commission and as we advise up to the board can lean back on and identify when we're talking about the principles, what do they specifically look like in practice? Finally, we've identified as a working ad hoc group some principles and commitments that we believe are incredibly important when looking at intervention and what should be incorporated when taking a lens into prevention. First is early intervention, identifying risk factors and targeting those at risk. So really getting, providing a service early and often, setting up a system that can identify early in the crisis the need to provide assistance. Increasing community awareness and education, that's something that we witnessed and we experienced in the Emergency Rental Assistance Program that, like with any program or any resource, it's incredibly great to have that resource, but it's only as valuable as those who know about the resource. So ensuring that those who need it are aware of it. Taking a harm reduction, strength-based approach, having an effective reentry and transitioning plan, preventing returns to the system after receiving an initial service around prevention, the importance of measuring our outcomes, being data-driven, and then really focusing on housing stability, preventing returns to homelessness and ensuring longitudinal success. So that essentially wraps up our draft. I'd like to open it up to if any of the commissioners, any of the working ad hoc group members want to fill in any blanks or have anything to say. I see Matt.
Yeah, thanks, Doug, for the overview. It's very helpful. And in our conversations as an ad hoc, one of the things that we just are continue to wrestle with and want to remind this commission of is just that this pillar in contrast to the others, or maybe in more of a contrast to the others, contains a lot of activities that aren't captured within the continuum of care. And so when Doug reports out on the HMIS numbers, all that data is data that's entered into the homeless management information system is typically through agencies that are participants in the continuum of care. But if you're talking about preventing people from falling into homelessness, there's lots of informal interventions, and those, most communities in Orange counties have churches that might have a clothing closet or a food pantry or some kind of a, maybe even a benevolence fund that serves as interventions to prevent people from falling into homelessness when there's some kind of a crisis, whether that's job loss or something related to COVID or domestic violence. They can kind of, communities can rally around individuals and care for them. and prevent them from falling into homelessness. So those activities aren't always captured in the system of care, but we recognize the system recognizes that those exist and the value of those. And I think one of the opportunities for the continuum looking to the future is to come to a better understanding of what those interventions are, what's taking place, how they're working, how to link them in to the continuum, just so that we can track and even support those kinds of efforts. Final thing I would say is that Jeannie Aubrey, who's on this commission and like me is one of the continuum of care board members, representatives to this commission, works for the Department of Education. And she, it's been some time ago, but she did report, she did a presentation to this commission about her work. And one of the unique things about the Department of Education is that that's an entity that does track some of these preventative issues because they have a much broader definition of homelessness. So if families are doubled up in an apartment, let's say, if they've got school-aged kids in the Department of Education, they have essentially, you know, case managers and social workers that are looking to provide interventions in those cases to those families so that they don't lapse into what HUD would consider homeless, like street level homeless, and to try and, you know, maintain their housing, even if they're doubled up. Whereas families that are doubled up, you know, wouldn't be counted in the HUD definition of homelessness. So the Department of Education has a much broader definition, in part because of this issue of prevention and diversion. What they're seeking to do is with families that have school-aged children is to provide those early interventions that would prevent them from falling into homelessness to maintain their housing. But that's another, I would think that's another opportunity for this commission is to integrate some of that data and information from a prevention and diversion standpoint, because this pillar is so critical. And like anything else in the human services, you know, if you can prevent something from happening, not only is it more of a humanitarian, more humane response, but it's also just, it's more cost-effective. It's less, it's less of a burden on the existing system of care if you can prevent it from happening in the first place. So I think from the ad hoc committee's perspective, the working group, there's a lot in this pillar, a lot of opportunity to expand it and develop it as time passes.
Thank you, Matt. Are there any other members of the ad hoc that have anything to add?
Paul Wyatt has his hand raised, Chairman. So go ahead, Paul.
Thank you, Ellery. I'll endorse Matt's statements about, you know, the number of groups operating in here. Any of you who have spent any time discussing homelessness with me know that prevention is sort of sometimes the mantra I pound on too often, maybe because you know, it's far more productive in a variety of ways, including, as Matt said, cost-effective, but also trauma reduction to prevent homelessness than it is to handle it once it becomes a crisis. Any care provider knows that if you try to get early and prevent the situation from becoming a crisis is the most effective way to deal with it. I have some concerns here. So bringing this in is the first one we really start to put some effort on. I mean, if I were the czar of the budget, I would say, you know, about 2/3 of our money ought to be spent on preventing homelessness and not on, you know, the crisis side of it. We could work, not that I don't think we need to deal with crises, but keeping people from getting there is such a critical thing and often overlooked because we don't have good outreach to detect and know when people are at risk, and our programs there, which is where, you know, Matt's comments about organizations that work are outside of, you know, our purview come in. If you look at the huge jump in the service, as Doug said, it's due to the emergency rental assistance. And I think that title of that program is key. That's an emergency program, and due to COVID and the emergency created by, you know, the job loss in COVID, and then making sure that that doesn't displace people and so forth is critical. But as we phase out of that situation, now we need to phase into a sustainable long-term preventive programs where we look at, you know, rental assistance programs and how to enroll and how to do that ongoing, and not simply deal with it as a one-time emergency, but an ongoing need and program. So I think we have an opportunity to learn from this program in terms of how best to apply it and put that program in place for long-term about how to get people to where they are capable of sustainable financial situations for families and so forth. I also think that, you know, when the programs come up here, we talked about this earlier, we, you know, on preventive programs, we need, you know, an entry point where people, when they become concerned, have a way to find out programs that can help them. And we still have some, I think that we have some work to do on gaining access to care. One of the big issues that we know on the emergency rental assistance, there's still a lot of unspent money and there's still a lot of people in need of emergency rental assistance. And we still have a struggle to tie them together so people know how to get it. And we need, again, a system in place where it's always operating, where everybody in the county should know where to go, and that program should pop up immediately and make it easy to access that program. We shouldn't have anybody who needs it not be able to find it. So I think we you know, as we lay out strategy, we have a lot of work to do in that area. And the other thing, I think this emergency rental assistance program was set up due to, you know, the economic impact of COVID and the displacement, you know, the workforce impact on it. But I think we didn't spend enough time here. We got some work to do to add, you know, preventive of behavioral displacement from homelessness, second primary cost of homelessness has to do with, you know, mental health and substance abuse, where, you know, that the behavior ends up causing homelessness. And again, it's another one where preventive efforts to intervene earlier before it becomes to the point of homelessness as a result of that is another critical thing we need to add to our overall preventive programs and make sure that we're aware of and we start to look at. I know that Commissioner Moncrief, I know who heads the Be Well unit, for example, is on today, but that's a group that's come up recently who, you know, basically I think has the capability of starting to step up in preventive areas, and the county's Mental Health Services Association and others are trying to work in that area, and we need to pull them into this discussion on prevention also. So I think we've brought it to the attention of really making a robust discussion around prevention. I think it'll need a lot more attention for us to really, you know, push it. And just final last comment on the previous 10-year plan to end homelessness that, you know, what was put together as they went through the whole work. When they came back, they also recommended that prevention be the number one thing for, you know, the commission and the county to focus on in order to bring homelessness, the number of homeless down. So I think this is a good topic, a lot of work to be done. I don't want it to distract from all the rest of the work, but I think it needs a huge amount of effort and it's really important. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Any other person from the ad hoc that'd like to comment?
Not from the ad hoc, Mr. Chairman, but Commissioner Todd Spitzer has his hand up.
Then we'd like to move on to the rest of the commission, and any other commissioner that would like to comment or has a suggestion, please raise your hand. Mr. Spitzer, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I just want to dovetail on the last comments. The Orange County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, obviously, Mr. Chairman, you know you've been participating. We are doing a lot in terms of the whole spectrum on the criminal justice side, from contact in the community to an arrest. And my office now has a recidivism reduction unit, a behavioral health unit focusing specifically on those who have mental health issues and substance addiction issues. And we are now working on a pre-trial or actually a pre-filing program where we may not even file criminal charges for people under the influence of alcohol or drugs who are committing low-level offenses if we can get their agreement to go into a program. So I don't know who can answer this question. I just want to know this is being looked at, because I think it has to be integrated. And I want to make sure that if we offer somebody a program in order to get them out of custody so they don't lose a job, because that is critical, and they have children or significant other at home. Let's say it's a domestic violence because of alcohol or drugs, and I want to, as an agreement, get that person into a program, but I can't have them return home. What kind of resources are we going to have so that the children and the, let's say spouse, for lack of a better description in this context, they don't become homeless because they can't pay their rent or whatever, because the person who's been arrested or detained can't go back to that house for obvious reasons until they go through their program, say a domestic violence. But those people still at home don't become homeless. How are we thinking about that as we're starting to deal with those individuals in the criminal justice system? Because I think most of you know one of the biggest reasons we have a difficulty prosecuting domestic violence is because, and I'll just use a woman or spouse, she comes into court and says she doesn't want to prosecute, or she recants because she needs that person as a breadwinner or she's going to be homeless.
That's a very interesting question. Perhaps our ad hoc may enter into some of that discussion at its next meeting. I don't have an answer for that. I don't know if any other commissioner would comment on that.
The one thing I might say, Vice Chair Chafee, is that our office, just on one point of Commissioner Spitzer's comments, our office works with OCC, JCC. I think all that input's incredibly valuable for the working ad hoc group. But our office will be the conduit to ensure that the working ad hoc group and the OCC JCC are working together.
Okay, anyone else from our commission membership have questions or comments or suggestions on this item?
And Chairman, we have Commissioner Paul Wyatt and Commissioner George Searcy with their hands raised. So go ahead, Paul.
I wanted to respond to Commissioner Spitzer's item. This is exactly where we should be, you know, doing our work in this. Every time we are in contact with somebody and, you know, and that situation could be changed or is about to change, and we don't take the opportunity to ensure that the result of that, of actions we take, don't prevent homelessness and deal with it, then we missed an opportunity. As I mentioned on prevention, the first difficult thing is you have to know that the situation that puts them at risk exists. So Commissioner Spitzer just, nicely described a situation that puts a family at risk. And so we know about it. And if we don't take the rental assistance and other programs to these kinds of opportunities to make sure that we provide that, bridge, economic bridge, until the situation, you know, is resolved. Then we simply missed an opportunity. So these are the kind of inputs where we might miss where we could prevent homelessness, that adding them to the program was just, this is the kind of information we need together to add the program and make it be what it needs to be. So I think this needs, as the ad hoc working group gets put on our priority, we need to find out what resources we can bring to bear. And you know, we should have a good answer to by next meeting in terms of what we might be able to do there, I would say.
Thank you, Paul. And the other commissioner?
Commissioner Searcy, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Valerie and Chair. Just in response to Commissioner Spitzer's remarks, I would also add to what Paul has said that it seems to me that based on my experience working with domestic violence providers, as well as the collaborative court systems, that, and this is, I guess this might be a question for Doug, is there, what I hear inherent in what our district attorney is asking for is an alignment between housing navigation and the justice system, which would, to me, make a lot of sense being founded in the collaborative court model, but maybe I'm wrong. Doug, would you have a thought on that?
Yeah, we're working on this on several fronts, participating in the OCC-JCC collaboration that DA Spitzer mentioned is a key front on that. So this is definitely something that the county and our office is not only aware of, but realizes is an area of focus that we need to be a part of.
Great.
And Commissioner Scott Stiles has his hand up, so go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Valerie. Mr. Commissioner, just thought I'd piggyback on another comment that Paul made. Just yesterday here in Garden Grove, we rolled out the beginning stages of our partnership with Be Well OC and our mobile mental health van in collaboration with the county as well. So it's something that we're very excited about. We think it is a program that could take up to 14,000 calls per year, folks suffering from mental health, substance abuse, and homelessness issues. So it's a pilot program, and we're gonna spend the next 12 months working the program and determining its effectiveness. Had a great partnership so far with Be Well OC, and we're really excited about the program. We're in close partnership with our police department on this, and so we're all excited about the program. And you know, potentially maybe this the commission might want an update from Marshall Moncrief or somebody on the overall program throughout the county. Just wanted to add that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Chairman, Commissioner Jim Vanderpool has his hands up. So go ahead, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And tagging on to my colleague from the city of Garden Grove, I want to report from Anaheim, we've done the same, that we've entered into a contract in our last council meeting with BULOC for a pilot program as well. So we're very excited to explore this very unique and creative approach as a divergent typical law enforcement for these special circumstances. So excited to be part of the Be Well team and get this program up and going, hopefully even broader in North Orange County and beyond. That's all, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
And Chairman, I have no further commissioners indicating a desire to comment.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. It's clear that early intervention and access to programs is key to so many things. And certainly a special key to our homelessness prevention. Madam Clerk, would you please read item 3?
Okay, thank you. So item 3 under the action item calendar is to approve the Commission to End Homelessness minutes from the August 26, 2021 special meeting. At this time, any members of the public wishing to speak on item 3, please press *9 on your telephone now or raise your hand in the Zoom app. And I'll go ahead and start the timer while members of the public may wish to speak. Okay, at At this point, I do have one request to speak from Brooke Weitzman. So Brooke, I've allowed you to talk. If you could unmute yourself.
Thanks. Did that work? Yeah, it did.
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you. Go ahead.
Great to see the commission members here and meeting and talking about doing things. Hopefully that's a good sign for moving forward. It's very concerning that the commission seems to kind of overall agree that prevention is different than what the COC is for and different than what most of the providers here do, because prevention is a critical piece of what so many of you are doing. I'll give you an example. Today, I've been emailing many of the members of this commission and Mr. Becht about an individual who was placed into a housing opportunity through county funded programs, knew at the time that it might not be a permanent opportunity, took it anyway with the promise he would still have support, and now has no support. And so he is facing being homeless again, has already been forced back into kind of hopping between friends' places. And that prevention piece was missing. And so he is someone who came through this system, has worked with many of these exact providers. And instead of being reconnected with a prevention option, each provider is pointing him to a different one. So now he's getting phone calls from at least three different providers, plus trying to work with the county, and can't even figure out who his case manager is, or who could figure out if he's in HMIS, or who could figure out what programs he qualifies for. And this isn't a unique story. This is just the one I happen to be working with today that I know has worked with many of your agencies. And so I think it is a mistake to act like prevention is somehow separate, that prevention is a critical piece of the system. And when we run people through our system, or the factions of pieces that we call a system, even folks who have been chronically homeless or have other challenges to housing, that if we kind of ignore the fact that prevention of homelessness on the back end is a critical piece of success, if we don't bother to track those outcomes and to ensure that we continue with the ongoing support, we're spending a lot of time, money, and effort to set people up to become homeless again within 6 or 12 or 18 months. And so I hope you all will kind of look at the big picture here and rethink the way you view prevention, and remember that that is kind of a part of the same piece, that we do continue to need prevention, especially for folks who do have greater mental health challenges or who do have other ongoing trauma, to ensure that once we get them into a placement, that we continue to focus the prevention funds as necessary to keep them in the placement and offer them success in that placement. You know, the number one most common thing I see people lose their subsidized housing for is because they let their family member, their own child, come in too often to shower and have violated overnight guest rules, because there's limits on that. And so if we're not looking at the whole picture, if we're not looking at the way in which generational homelessness is impacted by prevention of loss of housing in everything from the survivor's guilt of those who receive housing without their friends and family to prevention.
Thank you, Brooke. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Okay, and we have no other requests to speak at this time, and the full 3 minutes has elapsed.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. This is actually an action item simply to approve minutes. And so any corrections or additions that any of the commissioners see? Otherwise, I would appreciate a motion to approve and a second, and then the clerk will call the roll.
I'm there.
Okay. I'm not sure who that was.
I believe that was Sue Parks and Tita Smith at the same time. So. So Sue, if I put you as motion, Tita as the second, will you agree?
Yes.
Yes, Tita.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for the little competition right there. If the clerk would please call the roll.
Yes, thank you. So please respond yes, no, or abstain when I call your name. Richard Afable. Randy Black. Doug Chafee.
Aye.
Robert Dunn.
Aye.
Marshall Moncrief. Jim Palmer.
Aye.
Sue Parks.
Aye.
Milo Penman.
Hi, would I abstain since I wasn't on the commission at that time, or would, how would I proceed with that?
You can abstain since you weren't here, but not being here doesn't prevent you from voting to approve. So you can either vote yes or abstain. It's up to you.
I'll abstain. I just wasn't here to speak to that. Thank you.
No problem. George Searcy? You are muted, George, so I can't record.
Yes, I vote aye.
Okay. Tita Smith?
Aye.
Todd Spitzer?
Yes.
Scott Stiles?
Yes.
Jack Twan?
Yes.
James Vanderpool?
Abstain.
Don Wagner?
Aye.
Nathan Wilson? Paul Wyatt?
Yes.
And Dan Young? The motion does pass with the majority of voting members present. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Would you please read the next item?
Yes, so item number 4 under the action items is to appoint 2 members of the Commission to End Homelessness to the 2022 point in time count ad hoc in partnership with the Continuum of Care. At this time, any members of the public wishing to speak on item 4, please press *9 on your telephone now or raise your hand in the Zoom app. And I will start the timer while we wait for any indication of individuals wanting to speak. And I'm not seeing any members of the public that wish to speak at this time, so we're just going to allow the remaining 2.5 minutes to elapse before the commission can continue. So just bear with us for a moment. And about 30 seconds left, Chairman. Hold on just a moment. Okay, Chairman, at this time, there are no public speakers on this item.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. What we need to do here is to find 2 members of our commission who will work with the Continuum of Care, which is the upcoming point-in-time count. The point-in-time count is the end of January, and I wonder if, Mr. Becht, if you would kind of describe that process, the timing. I remember when we talked about it, the count is sometimes done early in the morning and sometimes late at night. Perhaps you could describe that process, and anyone who'd like to join in can do so.
Yeah, so I'll start off, thank you, with a little bit of a description of the point in time count. So the point in time count's required is a COC required activity. The federal government, the Housing and Urban Development Department, requires that each continuum of care conducts an unsheltered point in time count once every 2 years. That point in time count allows us to get a one-time census of the folks, of the population that's not only unsheltered, but also sheltered. In Orange County, we will be conducting the point in time count it's January 25th, 26th, and 27th. It's a 3-day event. Each day, the point in time count will go out and canvass one service planning area, In the morning, it will canvass it. And then again, in the evening, it'll canvass it. This is an incredibly valuable tool, not only to get an understanding of those that are experiencing homelessness, but there's significant state and federal funding that uses the results in a point in time count to help allocate its funding. So in order to ensure that Orange County gets the funding that it deserves and its fair share, this point in time count is critical. Now, in terms of the committee here that we're looking for two members from the commission to join, this will be a committee that's acts as a almost like a steering committee on the continuum of care. It will be working with the Office of Care Coordination and CityNet, who is the project manager of the point in time count, to help make some of the critical decisions around the operations and data collection of the point in time count. The expectation is this committee will meet approximately once a month for the next 3 months, for around 2 hours each month, and that each member of this committee will hopefully participate in the point in time count when it occurs at the end of January. So we think that I know the continuum of care thinks that having two members of the commission is going to be really vital and add a lot to their commission and ensure that our count is conducted in the most effective and efficient way.
I found it interesting as to why end of January. Could you explain that?
Yeah, so, you know, the end of January, so HUD requires that the account in each COC happens in the last 10 days of January. You know, from my experience and my understanding, the HUD does this and targets that time period because it provides the most accurate census of those who are truly homeless. I think the example is much more poignant for those cold weather cities. You know, in the winter there, if it's New York City, Chicago, or any other northern city, the census that they're seeing out on the street compared to in the shelter is very different when you compare it to the last 10 days of July to the last 10 days of January. So sort of one of the theories is that if you're out there in the last 10 days of January, you're truly experiencing homelessness, and the odds that this is, we're essentially getting a better, richer count in January.
And what are we doing by way of dealing with the homeless people? Is there a questionnaire?
Yeah, so there's essentially the canvas require when going out and canvassing and doing this census, whenever a volunteer or a participant in the point in time count comes across an individual that's experiencing homelessness, there will be a survey very similar to the one that was done in 2019. It's roughly 25 to 30 questions long. We've heard input that it's longer than desirable, but the information that's collected is important. A, it's HUD required, and B, there's some critical information that we here at Orange County collect that really helps shape the services that we provide around homelessness. And what I imagine, or what we anticipate, will be part of the survey, because this committee that we are looking to get two members on will be part of developing and finalizing this survey. We imagine that we'll continue to have a question around people's origin. So whether or not they're connected to Orange County prior to their homelessness, or if they've experiencing their homelessness here in Orange County, but actually come from somewhere else. And then the other piece that we think is going to be very critical is getting an understanding of how COVID has affected those that are experiencing homelessness. What type of effect, or has COVID caused an individual's homelessness, or caused it to extend? So the survey will be essentially, like I said, about 25 to 30 questions, and each individual will be asked these questions. Obviously, they're voluntary questions. And also, those point in time count surveyors will also have some type of care package that provides a little bit of an incentive or an offering of good faith to provide the people that they come across.
Thank you with that explanation. I know my wife and my staff have participated in prior point in time counts, and you get some training, and it's also kind of a camaraderie experience, although it is cold, so it's not the warmest time of year. I know Paul Wyatt has expressed an interest in being one of the persons to work with continuum of care. I'm going to nominate him. Is there any other member of the commission who would like to be in this 1-2 position?
I'd love to nominate Jack Twan. I think he'd be fantastic.
Okay, is there a yes to that nomination?
Since it's coming from Commissioner Park, I accept.
All right, we have two people nominated. Do we have a second to them?
Second, Tita Smith.
That's for both, I take it. All right.
Yes, sir.
If there's no further discussion, although I add that just because we chose two, that doesn't mean the rest of you can't enjoy that night in January as well. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Yes. So to appoint Commissioner Paul Wyatt and Commissioner Jack Twan, please respond yes, no, or abstain when I call your name. Richard Afable, Randy Black, Doug Chafee.
Yes.
Robert Dunn.
Yes.
Marshall Moncrief. Jim Palmer.
Yes.
Sue Parks.
Yes.
Milo Peineman.
Yes.
George Searcy.
Yes.
Tita Smith.
Yes.
Todd Spitzer.
Yes.
Scott Stiles.
Yes.
Jack Twan?
Yes.
James Vanderpool?
Yes.
Don Wagner?
Aye.
Nathan Wilson? Paul Wyatt?
Yes.
And Dan Young. And the motion passes with the majority of the members voting in the affirmative. So it passes. Thank you.
Well, congratulations for being chosen. That includes our action items, our agenda for today, but we do have public comments. At this time, we'll take general public comments. Any members of the public wishing to speak on non-agenda topics related to the Commission on Homelessness, please press *9 on your telephone now or raise your hand in Zoom. Madam Clerk, do we have any requests to speak?
Okay, at this time, I'm starting the public comments, and I don't see anybody's hand up yet, but I've started the timer for 3 minutes to ensure that anybody from the public wishing to speak has an opportunity to raise their hand. Okay, Chairman, I have one request from the public to speak, Pat Davis. So Pat, go ahead and unmute yourself at this time.
Thank you. Yes, and good afternoon. Thank you for the meeting again. My comment is a general one in terms of the pace at which this work is going on. To meet every other month, I get it. You've got an ad hoc in between, but again, I know each of you are busy, but I would be delighted to see you continue to have monthly meetings and possibly push the ad hoc work along at the rate it's going. Let's see, what was the last item was housing. That'll be 8+ months away, and then it's still the process of going through it. In this day and time, we're trying to partner more with the continuum of care and other resources that are bringing money to the table. The more clarity there is about this group would be useful. And I did find Doug's numbers fascinating. I'd be curious of the numbers of placements in that 3 or 4 month period, how many went to families and how many actually are in a permanent housing situation. But again, thank you. And again, the pace is critical, especially as we are still at twice the number of deaths of those without fixed abode than we were pre-COVID. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Pat. And we have about 1 minute left of the public comments time. So in case there's anybody else in the public that would like to speak, please raise your hand now. Okay, Chairman, at this time, I don't have any other requests to speak from the public, and the full 3 minutes has elapsed.
Well, thank you, Madam Clerk. And now we'll move on to commissioner comments. We've had a lot of very excellent comments as the meeting's progressed. And now's the time, if anyone care to make additional comments, suggestions, or just simply wrap up, please feel free to raise your hand.
Chairman, Commissioner Vanderpool has raised his hand as well as Paul Wyatt. So we'll start with Jim. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, just a quick update from the North Service planning area. Big congratulations. The League of California Cities provides every year what is known as the Helen Putnam Award to recognize excellence amongst California cities. And in 2021, the City of Buena Park, in conjunction with the 13 North Spa Cities received the Excellence Award for Housing Programs and Innovations. So a big kudos to the City of Buena Park, City of Placentia, the 13 cities that collaborated in that effort. A big thank you to the Orange County Board of Supervisors for critical funding, but it's a big, big success story for how we work in Orange County. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for that opportunity to share that award with this group.
Thank you. We need to celebrate our good things too. So thank you.
Okay, and go ahead, Paul.
Thank you. I just wanted to reiterate something that public speaker Pat Davis said there at the end of our meeting. Our pace, although we're looking through these pillars and discussing them and trying to set programs, our pace does probably need to, be pushed to do other things in parallel with that. I'm especially aware that we have with the COVID issues and now the concerns that it has created, we have more state and federal money available for homeless programs than we have. So this extra money that's being made available, we really need to make sure that Orange County gets every dollar that they're eligible to get out of those programs and put them to work in really effectively and efficient ways. And this commission could be instrumental in setting some strategy and some techniques and working with other, to pull this plan of how we go forward and how we apply for this money together. So I think the working ad hoc, we do meet more than once a month in between. We've met typically 3 or 4 times between each other meetings, but there's a lot of work to be done. And I do think the opportunity is now, and I don't want to be too casual about how long we take to develop programs at the same time and pass up some money that's available. So I think that's something we need to concentrate on and maybe even by the next meeting, sort of outline again the money that's available and what priorities and recommendations the ad hoc may be able to bring in terms of going after some of that.
Thank you, Paul. Madam Clerk, anyone else?
Yes, Commissioner Sue Parks has requested to speak. Go ahead, Sue.
Oh, thank you, Valerie, and thank you, Commissioner. I just want to say I appreciate Doug moving everything forward in terms of the pillars and creating a process for these discussions. Prevention is interwoven in everything we all do, and I'm glad we're starting off on that discussion. So I just want to add that the point in time count, for those of you who haven't done it, when I did it a couple of years ago, it was one of the most enlightening experiences I've had in terms of understanding who our homeless are. Having a chance to have those personal conversations was just amazing. So I encourage everybody to do it. And I'll follow Commissioner Vanderpool's lead on some good news. Again, this is just one piece of a very big issue, but since we started the Landlord Incentive Program together, Welcome Home OC, 2.5, 3 years ago, we've ended homelessness in people in private apartments all over the county now for 515 people, and 100 of those are veterans. So I thought you might like to know that too. So thank you.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, anyone else?
At this time, I don't see any other commissioners that have indicated a wish to provide comments. So,
Thank you. If I may, I want to give a big thank you to our ad hoc committee members. You're diligently working, moving as fast as you can. And that doesn't mean other things aren't happening at the same time. I know we're talking about the different grants becoming available. I know county departments are eager to get a hold of grant money. So the county itself is not asleep at those opportunities. And if you find one, it still takes staffing and research to put an application together. So I assure you the county will try to be on top of all of those things. We don't want to let any dollars go away to some other place if it could come here. You know, as we continue to operate during the COVID-19 pandemic, there have been a number of updates and guidance for allowing meetings to be conducted remotely. I have county council included in this meeting to answer any questions, but given the guidance provided by the state, it looks like we'll go back to hosting these meetings in person for the December meeting. We hosted at our county administration south building, the main conference room, and this will ensure we're in compliance with the new Brown Act requirements provided by the state. And being December, maybe that can be a happy time besides conducting all the business that we need to, and a chance really to get acquainted, have some new members. I like remote meetings. They mean I don't have to get on the freeway to attend them, and that's a waste of time. But I do enjoy seeing people, and I think it'll be great if we have a chance to meet together and develop a camaraderie and help us with our sense of purpose. All right. With that, that includes our Commission on Homelessness meeting, and we are now adjourned. And as I mentioned, our next meeting will be held on Wednesday, December 8th at 1:00 p.m. in the County South Administration Building. So thank you all for giving your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.